Okay then, so time on the show now to focus in detail on Matlock Town Football Club. So it's been a very eventful past 12 months for the Gladiators. Unfortunately, they've now been relegated and will play next season in step four of the non-league pyramid. So also recently at Matlock Town, there's been a big change behind the scenes. So recently, a vote was made and a vote was passed by Matlock Town season ticket holders that the club would then be taken into full ownership by Dave Hilton. And I'm well delighted to say that Dave has now joined me for an exclusive interview to discuss his plans for Matlock Town and also other issues as well that have come up recently. So, Dave, I know you don't do many interviews at all. So, first of all, thank you for coming on to the show. First question for you, Dave, that I'm sure all Matlock Town fans are wanting to know is what attracted you to Matlock Town, and why did you want to become so heavily involved with the club? Because I know obviously in this past season it was a dreadful start for Matlock. I think they had about what 2 points from their first 8 or 9 games. Did you have the idea of getting involved with Matlock before the start of that season, or did you see their position and go, maybe I could help out here?
It was the latter. I think the situation was, I'm from Derbyshire now, lived in Derbyshire for many years. I know the area well. I visit the area with my children. I've been to the football club on numerous occasions with other clubs and as you know, as a non-league football fan. And I know people on the board at Matlock, who, a couple of which were involved with me at Ilkeston. And the way it came about of my involvement was the club had found itself in a situation where it was clearly racking up some horrific results. I think just prior to me coming in was an 8-0 loss, which normally at that level the league is more competitive than that. It's very rare that you see results of that nature. So there was quite clearly something drastically wrong with the playing side. And I was approached by a couple of the board members to ask if I'd be interested in helping out. Obviously, I've got contacts within football, and I think the majority of the conversation was really about would I help out financially. The situation was they knew that they needed to change the playing squad, and they recently found out that the playing squad had been put in its entirety under contracts. And these were players that, in my opinion and of the board's opinion, were not to the level. So that needed to be remedied to give the club any hope of staying in the division. I think it was 11 games, 2 points, or something around there, which is an horrendous head start to give any club, especially when you've got to then replace the whole playing squad. So I was asked if I would come in and assist and use contacts and use funds of my own to help. I did express at the time, timing was awful for me. I'd been out of football for about a year, due to obviously the events at Scunthorpe. Wasn't sure if I wanted to get back into football. I missed it, but wasn't sure if I wanted everything else that came with it. But when I sat down with the board and, came to the club and reminded myself of how stunning the place is, it gave me an appetite again. And yeah, I agreed to come on board on that basis, and that's where the work started.
Okay, so as we well discussed from the top of our chat, so recently a vote took place amongst Matlock Town season ticket holders, and a majority vote went through for you to take over ownership of the club, rather than the club remaining as fan owned. So I'm sure every Matlock Town supporter, and particularly those that are not season ticket holders and weren't able to attend that vote, they really want to know what your short-term plans are for the club. So, say within the next 6 to 12 months, what are you looking to achieve both on and off the pitch for the Gladiators?
Initially, it's obviously going to be a we've just issued the retain list, so we've got a real good core group. We're in discussions with numerous players. Some deals are already agreed. So we'll be looking imminently to publicise new signings. We want our business done early so that Lads can concentrate on having a holiday and you know, after finishing a long season, and then we can get back to pre-season and start to gel a squad so that we don't have the same revolving door and same issues that we had last year. We want a core squad of players above the level, not below, not even at the level. We want, you know, all of the lads that we've got and that we're going to recruit, we feel are, you know, minimum step three, maybe step two players, some maybe even higher. That's our belief. So the recruitment will be strong, and we'll obviously be looking to make sure that the squad is gelled and ready to hit the ground running for the season start. So that's the first objective, is obviously to nail the football side, and then there's discussions of what we can and what we can't do in and around the facility, both in the short term and the long term. There's a hell of a lot to discuss with people at the club. I'm only just starting now to understand everybody's roles. You know, we've got a lot of volunteers, we've got staff. You know, our groundsman has retired. He's been looking to retire for some time, and he's retired, so we've got a new groundsman coming in. Yeah, so there's a lot happening. It's going to take a lot of time and effort over the summer, but hopefully by the time the season starts, on the pitch we'll be strong, and off the pitch we'll have a clear plan and direction as to how we move forward.
And at the moment, what sort of long-term plans do you have for the club? I mean, in a few years' time, I mean, what would you like to see, both in terms of, you know, where they are on the pitch, but also off the pitch? Do you have any sort of long-term forecast plans for the Gladiators?
Promotions, obviously. I think any club that's taken over by a private backer, I'm not going to say investor because it's not an investment. A football club is not an investment. You don't make money on football, certainly not at this level. So anybody that is putting money into a football club, you know, have aspirations of success. You know, that's pretty much the only reason. And I'm no different. And I think this is where the cricket element has been spoken about and misconstrued and stuff, but we know that we've got to, in some format, come to an agreement with the cricket side, because the first thing that I realised after coming in is that, you know, limited works can be done to the pitch, because as soon as the football finishes, the cricket side then need to utilise the pitch to form their boundary. And we have a real issue with ground grading requirements if we are to progress. And from my point of view, there doesn't seem a lot of point investing significantly to. You know, it's not an immediate problem now, especially at the level that we're now going to be at this season. But with the aspirations of going higher, it's something we've got to remedy now. It's a big, big part of what we've got to remedy to make sure that the club can progress and move forward if and when the success comes. So a big part of what we're doing is discussing with the cricket club of how we can make it work to suit all parties. We work closely with them. We've got a good relationship with them. And it's just understanding, you know, this talk about hybrid cricket wickets and all sorts of stuff that we're discussing with them, to work in unison and make sure that we get an outcome that is satisfactory and good for everybody at the football and the cricket club. So that's a big part of the future plans and discussions. And it's certainly going in the right direction. For everything else, I don't want to talk too much. I'll be honest, I don't want to fuel trolls. I don't want to, you know, make promises and say this and say that, and all of a sudden, you know, people are popping up all over the place and saying, "Oh, we've heard that," or "We've seen that," or, you know, I'm not interested in any of that. At Ilkeston, when I was at Ilkeston, I worked under the radar. I was allowed to work under the radar. I did a lot of good work there. Whereas when I was at Scunthorpe, there was a lot. It was all in the public eye all of the time. And I want this to be very much an Ilkeston scenario. I want to be able to sit in the bar. I attend all matches. I want to be approachable for supporters if they've got questions, however uncomfortable it makes me or them feel. They can ask the questions. I'll give them the answers. You know, they can sit and have a pint with me, and that's how I feel non-league football clubs should be. And I want to get back to that. That's what I enjoyed at Ilkeston. That's what I love. That's what I miss, and that's what I want Matlock to be.
This season just gone, obviously it was, you know, it ended up being a very bad season for the Gladiators. Were you surprised by the club's relegation this season, considering how much money you put into the club? Because you still joined sort of like around September. Well, not joined as in, you managed to contribute still fairly early on in the season, but the club still ended up going down despite being about, I think, in 12th position at one point. But were you surprised by the club's relegation this season?
Yes, there was, I'm not going to lie, there was one point in the season when we went on, I think it was 9-game unbeaten run, including 7 wins, and we had one eye on the playoffs, which was miraculous. When I look back now and think of where we finished and how the season ended up. But I think if I look at the points per game that we achieved since we came in, and yes, we had a revolving door, I have to take full responsibility for that. I think the only issue is when you're trying to when you are trying to build a squad, a new squad from scratch, partway into a season, most decent players and most players that you would normally attract or attempt to bring into the club in the summer are not available. So you're very much looking at trying to pull favours, trying to get loans, trying to get players that are maybe out of favour or been injured. And then the problem that you have is you pick up injuries of your own and suspensions, then you've got to go out again and all the time you're trying to gel this squad, and then you get players that start to get back from their injury and get back fit, and their parent clubs pull them back, or they perform well and the parent clubs pull them back, like we did with Sean Etelaku, who ended up playing really well for us. We played Macclesfield, and then Macclesfield went and he got recalled the following day, and Macclesfield bought him from Barrow, and I think that's football. That's what happens. We cycled 56 players. I mean, if you take away the initial sort of 18 that we let go when I came in, we have still used well in excess of 30 odd players during that time. Some of it forced, some of it wrong decisions in bringing players in. I think that the bulk of the downfall with it was, I believe I got the recruitment wrong with the managers. I think we were pushing to bring in the best players that we could possibly get. And when I look back now and I look back at the level and I look back at the teams that survived, a lot of the players that we bought in were used to being at the other end of the table. We talk about people like, Noel Williams, that came from a side that has been sat at the top of the Southern League all season. And we talk about players of that caliber that are used to being at the other end of the table or in leagues above, and they're coming in whilst trying to gel with a new manager and a new squad, and with obviously the negativity around the club, the fact that we were hanging around the relegation zone. And I think really is what we needed was fighters, that were used to being at the bottom half of the table and used to fighting. I do think maybe the recruitment was slightly wrong in that aspect, and I have to wear that on my shoulders. But we live and learn. I honestly believe that them same players, if we were in the top six, would be winning most weeks. Unfortunately, you get no, rub of the green, no luck, and no confidence when you're down at the bottom. And unfortunately, rather than the players bring confidence to other players, the negativity creeped into to all of them players. There was a lot of nervousness. I mean, we played a fixture against Morpeth at home, I think it was, and we didn't have a shot against us. Not a shot on target against us. We scored two own goals. We managed to lose the game, and it's just bizarre situations. But like I say, most of that has to fall on my shoulders. We got it wrong. I will say this, I think if you look at the points per game ratio, we averaged over a point a game. And I think if you added in the 11 games or 10 games or whatever it was, and you took off the 2 points, and we averaged a point a game for that time, as well as obviously the 3 points that we unfortunately, as a club, made an error in respect of a playing an ineligible player. I think we finished about 12th. So it's a combination of things. The recruitment, whilst very good players, was probably not the best. The revolving door was spinning off its hinges. Some of that with panic as the season got later. And then I think, the fact that we gave teams such a head start at the beginning, and we was always playing catch up, even though we caught up. You can't win every, you're never going to go on a 30 game unbeaten run when you're used to being at the bottom of the league trying to gel a squad, So that run was always going to end, and we were going to drop points. So it's a massive learning curve, but we feel that we're in a good place now. The recruitment is going to be really strong. I think supporters are going to be really happy with what's coming in. and we will be really strong next year. There's no guarantees in football, but we will make sure we do everything that we need to do to get back where we belong as quickly as possible.
Now, in terms of Matlock Town, because obviously, as a radio station that covers, so many different local teams across so many different levels, we have quite a few Matlock Town fans that will be listening in. And obviously, we need to make sure that we're, covering everything that I think covers every Matlock Town fan's opinion as well. So obviously, there's still plenty of people that are very happy with the direction of the club in terms of they think it's best for you to take full ownership if the club is going to progress up the league pyramid. But not every season ticket holder will have voted for you to take over. And of course, it was just a vote for season ticket holders. So I know there are Matlock Town fans who are not season ticket holders that are worried about your role now at the club. And I think that stems a lot from what happened at your time as the owner of Scunthorpe United. Now, obviously, that's been well documented, and a lot of people have very strong opinions of that, in particular Scunthorpe United fans, because a lot of Scunthorpe United fans hold you responsible for a big, big mess that the Iron found themselves in. Do you accept the viewpoint from a lot of people, and in particular from Scunthorpe supporters, that you made big mistakes while at the club?
I accept that I made mistakes, yeah, for certain, some big. I accept that I bottled it. I believe certainly when I tried to hide the past, which I shouldn't have, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but when I did try to hide that, obviously there was then trust issues. But I think when the past came out, the local authority up there, sponsors, people started to then try to keep the club at arm's length, and I felt like I was strangling. I had the, you know, I was strangling the club. I was strangling the life out of the club because I couldn't. I mean, for instance, we had the parachute payment suspended. There was lots of issues that arose around my past coming out, which hindered the club. And in the end, I felt that it was a job too big for me, and I needed more support. It's a big, big club. There's 80,000 people in Scunthorpe. And one thing I learned up there is there's some wonderful people. I still speak to people at in Scunthorpe, that know the truth and the facts. And everybody in that town either knows somebody or are involved in some way as a supporter, as a volunteer, as an employee, or they know somebody that is at the football club. That's how big that club is. And the problem is, you need a lot of support, whether that be me or whether that be, the current board that are there at the moment, who are local people. And I felt at the time that I'd kind of hit a brick wall. There were people close to me that didn't want to be up there. It got quite toxic. And understandably so. When you make mistakes, you're going to be judged by them mistakes. And then I had the fact that I was being judged by my past as well. And in the end, I sat back and just thought, you know what? I need to put some pressure on the local consortium, because they were quite happy at the time to let me carry on funding the club, whilst remaining an interest in the club. So I had to kind of chuck myself under a bus a little bit and cut the funding, because I knew that would force the hand of the consortium to take the club up, and I just wanted out, if I'm honest. And like I say, I just have to put that down to the fact that I bottled it, and and the job was too big for me, and I accept that now. It was a completely different situation to the one that I had at Ilkeston, and it was costing me a hell of a lot of money. And it wasn't so much the finance element of it; it was the fact that a business plan was produced. And the business plan couldn't be followed because, like I say, there was a lot keeping the clubs at arm length, parachute payments stopped, the local authority, the sponsors, and supporters to a degree. And then obviously when I cut the funding for the final month, it was horrific. But I accept full responsibility for what went wrong there. Look, I inherited a massive debt at that football club. And I will say this. anything that I say to you now, I can evidence, and I'm quite happy to evidence. I've signed no NDAs purposely for this reason, if I ever needed to. And I've spent the last 19 months trying to be completely irrelevant. You know, I hope that Scunthorpe get back to where they belong. I hope that they do well in the playoffs. You know, and I wish them all the best. There's certainly no ill feeling from me. Like I say, there are a lot of good people in Scunthorpe, but out of all them 80,000 people, there are probably 60 or 70 trolls online, a lot of them faceless accounts that come after me and spout utter rubbish. You know, the fact is that was a football club that within the first 6 weeks, I put in just shy of about £600,000. I paid a winding up petition of £192,000. I paid month 9 pay YE, which was about £87,000. I paid a quarter's VAT, and I paid January's payroll, which was 4 days after I got into the club, which was £187,000. The football club was costing roughly £250,000 a month to run. There was little to no income because they were bottom of the National League, and gates had fallen pretty much to just season ticket holders, of which I received no benefit from, because that was, you know, that money was bought in during the Peter Swan time. So there was little money coming in and 250 grand a month going out. And then I signed new players as well to try and keep us up. So there was substantial monies going out each month with nothing coming in. You know, people have spoken, and I just want to address this as well. People have spoken that, you know, I managed to make money. I mean, you know, I'm not a magician. I lost well in excess of £1 million at Scunthorpe during my time there, which I can very easily evidence. I've got HMRC receipts, I've got, you know, payroll statements, I've got internal emails and internal spreadsheets, I've got creditor lists, I've got absolutely everything. I actually cleared over £300,000. Yes, there was new debts that arose while I was there, but the debt as a whole that the club had dropped by over £300,000 during my time. That's a fact. I can evidence it, you know. I kept the club running to the tune of £250,000 a month, there or thereabouts, including during the summer months when there was literally no income, and all the restocking costs and the pitch costs to get the new season running. The players never missed a payroll at all, despite what people have said. I never did, not, and you know, that was always paid. And apart from the final month when I gave, you know, Michelle 3 weeks' notice that was going to happen because I cut funding. You know, when you're on, I knew I was on the way out. So there was no way I was going to fund another month and lose another £250,000 when I knew that, you know, I'd got 1 foot out the door. So the club had a hell of a lot of money from me. Yes, there was an 1899 membership that I launched. It brought in £72,000. Again, I can evidence that. £220,000 worth of season tickets, £30,000 worth of shirt sales, just over £100,000 worth of sponsorships. You know, but if you tally that up, that doesn't even cover 2 months of what I was paying at that club. And there was very little else coming in. I had to lose an academy at the club, which obviously upset a lot of coaches, a lot of families, a lot of children, which is not nice, but it was a drain on the club by £250,000 to £300,000 a year. And it was about to lose the final year of its funding with the, you know, from the EFL. So that had to go, which obviously created some hostilities. But like I say, I lost a hell of a lot of money at Scunthorpe. The club was, I don't know if it was a week or 2 weeks away from being wound up in the court. And contrary to what anyone says, there was nobody else at the table physically offering any money to take the club on. And I paid out nearly £600,000 in the first 2 weeks. I can evidence every penny of it. And then it just continued taking money from there. I also built a new playing squad at Scunthorpe. Much better. It's had them competitive for 2 years now. I dropped the debt at the club in its entirety. Yes, some new ones appeared, but I dropped the debt by over £300,000. And I inherited a payroll of £187,000 a month, which I can comfortably evidence. If someone wants to come and sit down, it'd be no problem. And when I left, it was £122,000. And I actually don't think the fascination with me and the grief that I get is from Scunthorpe fans, because I don't think they care. They don't care enough either way about me. I was there for a short period of time. I think what a lot of it is trolls. It's online trolls that have their own agendas and their own narratives, and they push it, you know, to the point where, you know, I've had people send me clips from X where someone as high as Newcastle and as far down as Torquay are telling Matlock fans that I'm going to kill their club within 2 months. I mean, how can they possibly know that? They know nothing about me, nothing about the, you know, nothing genuine about my past, about the internals of what went off at Scunthorpe. But the only one positive I can take from Scunthorpe is I do honestly believe that if I hadn't have stepped in, the club wouldn't be here now. That's the only one positive I can take, because the rest of it was pretty negative. But like I say, there's no NDAs. I can evidence everything I'm saying. You know, but I've kept quiet because I don't want to be relevant, and the genuine supporters of Scunthorpe don't care about me either. So, you know, I don't want to give the trolls a platform.
Okay, and I appreciate, obviously, you don't do many interviews at all, Dave. So just would you like to use this opportunity to say, you know, do you have a message for all Scunthorpe United supporters?
Not really, you know. Like I say, I don't want to be relevant to what they're doing now. They've got owners, local owners, you know, they're in the playoffs, and hopefully they'll get promoted and they've got a bright future. And you know, I look out for their results. I hope they do well. But what they feel about me isn't really relevant. It's not going to change my life in any way, shape or form. Just like, you know, me talking about them is not going to change theirs. You know, I'm conscious of the fact that they've been through a real tough time in recent times. Myself, you know, I've obviously been involved in that as well, and caused some of that. So I don't think they'll appreciate any form of me addressing them in any way, shape or form. Like I say, I want to be, and I think I am, completely irrelevant to that football club.
And just in terms of the Matlock Town fans who, you know, are a bit nervous about your role now at the club, and maybe they did not vote for you to take over full ownership of the Gladiators, what can you say to try and reassure them or convince them that, you know, things will go well, the direction will go well under you at the Gladiators, and that there won't be any sort of a repeat of the situation that happened at Scunthorpe United?
Well, there's a vast difference. What I would do is point them in the direction of Ilkeston. I mean, we was all at Ilkeston on Bank Holiday Monday. And, you know, I get a great reception there. I've got a lot of friends there. You know, I absolutely love the club. And they can see what myself and my business partner did there with the facilities and everything else. And the club has completely changed from what I did there. The difference with Scunthorpe is, you know, it was very different. It was a much, much bigger club, a much more vocal fan base, hell of a lot of debt, 6 relegations in 7 years, a playing squad that needed fully replacing, a tired old stadium that wasn't owned by the club. It was owned by the previous owner. So there was a hell of a lot at Scunthorpe, and like I've openly admitted, it was too big for me. It was too big a job for me. I bit off more than I could chew, and in the end, I bottled it and drove back down the motorway. But I don't think Matlock fans need to be looking at what happened at Scunthorpe, because Scunthorpe, albeit it was too big for me, I tried. I lost a lot of money trying, and nothing to do with my past impacted anything at Scunthorpe, other than the fact of what other people were seeing and hearing, and maybe distancing some themselves from events at the football club. But Ilkeston is very different, and I would probably direct into that. What I want at Matlock is I want to be able to sit down with supporters and supporters, not just at fans forums and stuff like that. You know, the non-league community is the best. It's the club is fantastic. It's in beautiful surroundings. I'm a big believer that everything happens for a reason. You know, I failed at Scunthorpe, but now I'm at Matlock, and what a beautiful place to be. But there's no guarantees in football. I can't guarantee we're going to get promotion after promotion after promotion. There's a lot of luck involved. You know, and football's like no other industry. But one thing I will say is we will be trying. And I'm more than approachable. Even if what they think they're going to tell me or ask me is going to upset me, feel free. You know, I've got fairly thick skin now. And I think that's what I want. I want the close-knit. Anyone that's unsure, I absolutely agree they should be, with what they can read. But just give me the time. let me work under the radar. I don't want to be doing interviews every week and promising this and promising that. Just let me crack on. Let me crack on. And if they want to know anything, come and approach me at any game and ask the question.
Former Matlock Town chairman Martin Harrison went, well, he conducted an interview on a separate media outlet recently where yourself was brought up frequently. One key thing that stood out for me was, well, and he said, and I quote on that separate media outlet, I've got evidence that it was never a donation. That's in terms of the money so far that's been involved since you were interested in the club. And when he was pressed on that, he again said, it's not a donation. No, again, the press and the PR that's coming out of the club, as in Matlock, is trying to present something that is factually incorrect. So what is your response to that? Because I think he's saying, I think he used the word investment. Is it an investment or is it a donation? Because he's saying that he has evidence that it's not a donation.
Okay, so firstly, I don't really know Martin. I met him once at an initial meeting when the board members that I do know brought me into the club. And I've seen him at a few games, waved and said hello, nothing more. A few conversations through messages, but normally through a WhatsApp group with all of the board involved. So I just want to point that out. It's not like I've had a close relationship or anything like that with Martin. When I came in, I was asked to focus purely on the football element. But what needs to be understood and what was obviously found, first of all, Martin cannot possibly know how and what has changed since he left. I think he left in November. Okay, so that's the first thing. So when I initially came to the club had obviously asked me if I could put in any funds and which were needed to get players off the books. Players don't just walk away from contracts, you know, and arguably there was players needed to be signed and paid fees for. So these things happened and there needed to be money. The club didn't have any money, you know. Martin Harrison put people in the clubhouse every day of the week, free of charge, that were using thousands of pounds worth a month worth of electricity and heating and water and they weren't paying a penny to use the facility. So not only was it costing the club a fortune, the club wasn't earning any money from the facility, which it now does on a day-to-day basis. He did that as chairman of the football club. He unknowingly to all of the board, and I can confirm this, and every board member, I mean, some of the board members at Matlock Football Club have been here, you know, they've been here longer than I've been born. They are die hard, you know, through and through Matlock fans. And not one of them got wind that he had put the whole playing squad that was below par on contracts. Now, is what that did is because of the results and the way the results were starting to go, inevitably the gates were going to start to fall, which means the revenue was going to fall, which then the playing budget that was set wouldn't be sustainable because the numbers coming through the gates wouldn't have been as high because of the situation the club was in. And this is why the board approached me. They panicked because they knew that if that happened, they couldn't, they, you know, eventually the club was going to be at financial risk. And, you know, and certainly the playing side wasn't going to get any better. I remember when I first came in, the lads were all having a pizza on the pitch, just been beat 8-0, you know, in the training session. They were all sat on the pitch having a pizza, and I just like it was mind blowing to me. So what happened with Martin was he did all of these things and put the club in danger in only a few months of being involved with the club. And so I was asked to come on board, and at that time the club's got no assets. You know, the stadium's leased, it doesn't have anything. And so they were asking for my money and had nothing. And what was agreed at that point, because they needed money from me very, very quickly and they needed me hands-on very quickly to try and help, was that it would go to a fans' vote to change the entity of the club to a privately owned club at some point. And if that vote was successful, some of those shares, my money that I put in would be converted into shares, so I'd have something for it. So that was the initial agreement when I came in, when Martin was there. It was just a way of, there was no guarantee for me that I was ever going to get anything, because if the fans voted against it going and kept it as a fan-led club, then the club had nothing to give me back. And, you know, the club, it wasn't a loan, there was no loan agreements, there was nothing put in writing. I literally just donated money to the club, and if it did go to a club governed by shares, that I would get some shares. And that was what was originally agreed. And then it changed, and then Martin left. I will say this as well, that Martin then came back. He's done nothing but try to cause mischief since he's left. He's contacted the FA to try and report to the FA that I should have done a fit and proper, which I've done, by the way, and passed. But I should be doing a fit and proper test because I'm more hands-on than he just tried to cause mischief from all angles. He came to the club, I remember, at the Mickleover game. He walked over to the Mickleover bench. He looked, drunk. And he was trying to get a Matlock player sent off for an elbow, and telling the Mickleover bench that it should be jumping all over the referee. And this is in front of Matlock fans. This is in front of my own eyes. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I've never seen nothing like it. He's just desperate to stay relevant. The fact of the matter is, he's openly come out and said that he was learning. Now, if you're learning to be a football club chairman, it's not a problem if it's your own money. But it's a problem when it's a fan-led club and you're using that money and committing that money and putting that club in danger, and then hiding behind the fact that you're learning. It's just bizarre. The whole situation is bizarre. So after the Mickleover incident, he was issued with a stadium ban, and he didn't mention that on his interview either. But I don't really want to give the guy much more of my time, to be honest. I know the people at the club don't. He's firmly in the past, and is an irrelevance. The fact is, when the vote was put out, there'd been no changeover. The club had not changed over to a share own, a club led by shares. So my money was in as a donation. When the vote was going through, the director said to me, "If the vote goes in favour of staying fan-led, is your money still a donation?" And I confirmed to them that it would be a donation. That was put in writing to all of the members. So there was no reneging on that. That was what it was. And if it would have been voted in as a fan-owned club and not my involvement, then the club would have kept my money. I also know Martin went on talking about the cricket. He doesn't understand the cricket element, and it's all just to fuel trolls. It's all just to fuel people, to jump on the back of nonsense stories. Apparently we're building a Tesco on the cricket, but it's just utter rubbish. Absolute utter rubbish. The cricket element has been exactly what I said earlier. Is all it is trying to reach an agreement with the cricket club, who have another facility as well, so that we can all work together and the club can progress through the leagues. And however that looks, and whatever cost that incurs for me, so be it. But that's all we are trying to achieve, nothing else. Re in respect of Martin, he wasn't really that relevant when he was at the club, if I'm completely honest. Apart from the fact that he caused some major problems for the board.
Okay, so what you're saying is, so your take on it is that when Martin Harrison said recently that, what you've done is the money you've put in so far is actually an investment, you're adamant that this is definitely the money you've put in so far in the season just gone is a donation.
Yeah, I mean, if I'd have ended up with some shares, could you argue it? Like I say, you can't really count anything as an investment, because who invests in non-league football clubs? It's not an investment. You either give in the money or you're loaning the money. And I've certainly not loaned the club any money. The only thing I was that was said to me at the time when I initially put the money in by Martin and the board was that if I put the money in and the fans voted for it to be a club governed by shares, that I would be rewarded with some shares in the football club to compensate for whatever money I put in. And obviously the amount of money I put in, then increased quite significantly throughout the season. But in the end, the club realised that, there was no way of me ever retrieving that money back if it was a fan-led club. The club had no assets. There was nothing for them. And I certainly wasn't going to put the club in any sort of danger for numerous reasons. One, I really like the club. I like the people at the club. I like non-league football. And the last thing I needed in this world is more negative publicity because a football club owes me a load of money and we still got relegated. So of course it was a donation. I just think Martin struggles to understand the basics. He doesn't understand football. We're all learning. We all learn every day. But we all have certain knowledge. Knowledge how to run a business to a degree. Knowledge of, how a football involvement. He has none of that. And I think his interview with Ed Dawes was purely just him trying to stay relevant. I really don't know why he didn't said what he said. But I know there's certainly some ill feeling there of when he left, and certainly when he got the stadium banned from the board of directors for him causing mischief, you know, during home fixtures, which was completely bizarre. So maybe there's just some ill feeling there.
Just the last thing in regards to Martin's comments, because he did also bring up on a couple of occasions about this fourth stand. So are you able to confirm what exactly the latest situation is with the Matlock cricket team in regards to what's happening with the fourth stand? And also in terms of sort of who owns the land that has Matlock Town Football Club and the cricket team? And are you able to assure people that Matlock Town will always be able to play at Causeway Lane?
So absolutely they can. The stadium is owned by a trust, and it's covenanted to protect it for only being available for sport and leisure use. You know, the football club and the cricket club have been here for, you know, 100 years or whatever. And they will always play here. You know, talk about, you know, if there was any development to be around the stadium, it would only be in respect of, you know, the size of the ground that could be developed whilst keeping the football element. And if that ever was to incorporate any form of development, you know, maybe above a stand or whatever, it would be on the basis that it would bring money into the football club. You know, a big part of what people have said to me, and the main concern is when you've got a private owner, is what happens if something happens to that owner. It's all been well and good if I top up a playing budget and we get free promotions in 4 years. But then what happens if my money disappears? That's the big concern that a lot of fans have, because the club couldn't self-sustain at this minute in time anywhere near that level, and they would quickly fall back down. So, you know, I will obviously be looking at ways that we can do things in and around the stadium to increase the revenue for the football club so that the club needs less from me over time. And can sustain, but whilst progressing and challenging at higher levels. In respect of the fourth stand, it's a tricky situation. We obviously will resolve it in some format, the cricket club. We've looked at hybrid pitch facilities for the cricket, because at the minute they have a cricket square with four cricket wickets. I don't really understand the cricket side of things too much, but they have four wickets because of the amount of usage that they can have. And a hybrid pitch, which a lot of cricket pavilions now have, are designed to be three or four times harder wearing, which may then negate the need to have so many cricket pitches, which then means the boundary doesn't need to be as long if we use the one that's furthest away. So there are a lot of conversations of how we make this work. We will, at some point, we will reach an agreement where we can do something, you know, to create the fourth stand, so that we can progress through the league and the ground grading with no issues. And we're working, you know, we're constantly in discussions about that. And that will continue.
And just as well about Ilkeston Town, because of course you've mentioned them before, but that is another football club that you were very heavily involved with before and before your time at Scunthorpe United. So you were the chairman there at Ilkeston Town. In general, what did you make of your time at the club? Do you think it was a success, and how did things end there?
Well, when I first went into Ilkeston, I went in just a financial backer. Mark Clifford was in there at the time. You know, it was just my interest and love of non-league football that brought me in it. And Andrew into that club. And Mark Clifford was a friend of ours. We did a lot of work there. Funny enough, you know, when we first got a hold of the club, or Mark did through, you know, from Alan Hardy in 2019, I think that was October, and by February, COVID had kicked in. So it was pretty, you know, it was fairly a horrendous start in respect to the football element and finances. But we obviously propped the club up through the whole of COVID. We installed £1 million artificial playing surface. You know, the club's got fantastic changing facilities, Recaro seats. You know, we refurbished all of the stands. the hospitality suite. We turned the classrooms into a hospitality suite. The bar, there's a hell of a lot been done at the club, and Andrew continues to do that there now. And I've got nothing but love for Ilkeston. I always will. You know, I joke with Andrew that if we did stay up, it would have been nice if, because they're on the border of the Southern League, that they could go to the Southern League, so I can cheer both clubs on. because it's very difficult with Matlock and Ilkeston in the same league. It's kind of a bittersweet scenario. But no, I think really highly of Ilkeston and the people there. They're always really welcoming to me. They respect what I did. Like I say, they left me to it. And Andrew, they let us work under the radar. And when the pass did come out, they didn't give me a hard time about it. And I just want to touch on the past. You know, people portray this picture that this past, you know, I haven't gone into a bank with a sawn-off shotgun or, you know, buried bodies under a patio or hurt children or done anything that deserves a life sentence. I owned a business. It was a call centre. Thousands of deals went through that call centre, and 14 of those were found to be missold. And I was convicted by trading standards. You know, does it warrant a life sentence? Absolutely not. And I am completely done apologising for that now. That is something that people, you know, need to move on from, because I certainly have. And the Ilkeston fans never gave me any grief for that. And like I say, I have the utmost respect for them as they do for me. And I believe they do. And their actions tell me they do. And I'm still close friends with the owner there now. So, yeah, just wonderful times. Even though it was COVID, I had a really, really good time there. And that's what gave me the ambition to then go into Scunthorpe. I had such a good time there. I thought that I could achieve that somewhere else on a bigger scale. And how wrong was I?
What's your ultimate goal at Matlock Town?
Short term is to obviously get back into step three at the first time of asking, improve the facilities where we can and move forward to create more income and revenue into the club. Keep growing the fan base. The club is growing. The fan base at the club is growing at a massive rate. I mean, we had 1,255 people here for the workshop game on the Saturday. You know, we've been in the bottom four for most of the season, which is absolutely outstanding. Yeah, and it's just, I think medium to long term is, again, keep improving the facilities, creating, you know, a higher level of revenue so the sustainability level of the club can be pushing at higher levels in the league pyramid. And, you know, rising through the leagues as quickly as we can. That's the ambition. Everyone can say whatever they want about football, you know, about owners, about players, about chairman, about, you know, managers, opposing fans, opposing clubs. They can say whatever they want. And it's all 90% of people want is to win football matches. And that's what we're looking and striving to do. I must say while we're on the interview, I'd like to thank everybody on the board, you know, and I not name them individually, but everybody on the board and everybody at the club has made me welcome. They're fantastic people here. That's one thing I will say. All of the volunteers, I know that some of them have took a bit of grief because the season's not gone to plan, but I can tell everybody that every single person at this football club, from the cleaners to the stewards to the program sellers to, you know, to the manager to the players to every single one of the board members to the bar staff, groundsmen, fantastic people, all love the club and all have the best interests of the club, you know, at heart, and I think they all should be recognised for that.
And just the very last question from me, David, because I appreciate it's been a long interview, but how confident are you that you'll be able to win over Matlock Town support, and indeed supporters of other teams as well, I guess, but primarily Matlock Town fans that are still yet to be won over? They're still concerned about what happened with your time at Scunthorpe. How confident are you that you can win those fans over and they can come on board and, you know, be confident that you can lead Matlock to success?
Well, I think, first of all, you mentioned other supporters of other clubs. I don't care. I'm 48 years old. People will make opinions of me. I'm not relevant to their life. If they're not Matlock Town supporters, I'm not relevant to theirs. They're not relevant to mine. And you know, I don't really care what other football supporters and trolls say about me. You know, my life won't change. In respect to you know, I don't need to win over all Matlock supporters, but there is, you know, obviously there's a lot of eyes on what we do. But the one thing I'll say is I've not had any negativity. There's a little bit online, but I've not had any real negativity at the club. Everybody's welcomed me, and I genuinely believe they'll give me the time. And I think in time we will unify everybody again. You know, it's been a tough season, but everybody will become, you know, will become unified. We'll all row in the same direction, and the success will come. It's a beautiful place. It's a growing club, rapidly growing club. You know, and you know, that's really as far as I can go with that. I'm only looking to appease people that are uncertain, and I'd like people to judge me by the actions, you know, and which is why I don't want to do interviews as a rule, to be honest. Words are words, you know, judge me on what I do.
Okay, Dave. Well, yeah, as you mentioned before, yeah, it's very rare that you do interviews. So thank you for giving us your time and for speaking exclusively to North Derbyshire Radio. I think we've covered a fair amount of areas there. But thanks for your time, Dave. And yeah, all the best for your, well, summer ahead, making plans for the Gladiators. So thanks for your time.
No problem. Hopefully you'll come down and catch a few games, eh? Spend some money here.